You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of Beaverton Christian Church in Beaverton, Oregon. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us even further, hit us up online at beaverton.cc or shoot us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this week's episode.
Good morning. How's everybody doing today? It's great to see you. It's going to be a great day. Where are our cat people at? Do we have cat people? Awesome. Do we have dog people? There's a difference between cat people and dog people. You say cat people and they're like, you dog people? Woo! Right? Dog people are the Ric Flair of animal people. That's what they're. I love dog people. Dog people are great. If you're here today and you're a cat or a dog person, even though those can be two totally different kind of people, we're glad you're here. We want you to not even be embarrassed about being a cat or a dog person. We're going to talk about cats and we're going to talk, actually, I'm not going to talk about cats. I apologize, cat people in advance. We're going to talk a little bit about dogs. But this new series is called Come As You Are. And I think a lot of us walk around with a false assumption that if Jesus were here today, he wouldn't necessarily like me very much because I'm not super religious, or I don't know as much as I think I should know about God, or frankly, sometimes like we don't even really like church all that much, or like if people really even knew who I was and like what my finances were like, or what my thought life was like, or the things I've done in my past, they wouldn't like me, so I'm pretty sure Jesus wouldn't. But the truth is, when you read the Bible, the people who seem to be the messiest are the people that Jesus seems to enjoy the most, the people he spends the most time with. And so this idea that church is a place for people who've got it all together doesn't come from the Bible. And so to talk about that for a second, I do want to talk about the dog park. You guys been to a dog park before? I love a dog park. Dogs pay a tremendous price for engaging in human society, don't they? Because there's just a lot of things we don't want dogs doing. Most of the things that dogs do naturally, we don't want a dog to do. But we really like dogs and we want them around. And so the dog park is the place humans take their beloved pets to let them just be dogs. Which is hilarious to me because about 5 seconds after arriving at a dog park, a dog immediately begins behaving like a dog and the owners just freak out. Because you go to the dog park and the dog starts running as fast as it can right away. Some dogs just love to run as fast as they can. They do this to get all the other dogs to chase them. And soon there's just a whole bunch of dogs running back and forth across the park, which is really fun until the lead dog stops to check to make sure everyone's still chasing him. And then it just turns into a ball of roiling, wrestling, yowling, yipping dogs. And then all the humans run over to make sure their dog doesn't get hurt. There's a term for this behavior, right? It's called a dog pile. Dogs love rolling around and wrestling on top of each other so much, we named the behavior after them. They're going to be just fine. Howling and barking, right? Sometimes the dog gets to the park and it's just manic barking. They're barking at every single thing they see. Bark, 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 bark. They're surrounded by a million other like naked thems and they can't get over how amazing it is. They're just like, the dog park is like Woodstock for dogs without the drugs. And they're just freaking out, right? And then so the owner is standing there with their cup of coffee. Buddy, stop, stop it. Stop, buddy, quiet, quiet, buddy, stop. Stop. We're outdoors. It's all dogs. Everybody's barking. You don't have to be embarrassed by the dog. Some dog inevitably takes advantage of the opportunity to engage in discovering every bone that's ever been buried under the earth, even though nobody has ever buried a bone at a dog park. They just begin a strip mining operation to clear the entire area. And the owner doesn't like that either. They're just shouting, leave it, leave it. I don't even know what it is to be left, but leave it. They're not going to go over and stop the dog from digging. They just need everybody else to know that the digging might not be a great behavior. Because the digging combined with the Oregon rain is what produces the greatest feature of the dog park, right? And that is the mud puddle. And if you've ever been to the dog park, there is inevitably some dog who needs to coat every fiber of its being in the mud hole, which is fantastic, unless it's your dog. Because when it's your dog, that dog still has to re-enter human society, and it can't do that. Because a dog can't clean itself up. Somebody has to clean the dog up, don't they? Someone's got to wash it because a dog can't get out a hose and a dog can't scrub itself down. The dog has to be cleaned by someone, which means there has to be a person and there has to be a place for messy dogs to find the love and comfort that they so need. Now, cat people are thinking, that's why you get a cat. Because they don't do stuff like that. Here's the problem. Dogs do, and people love dogs, which means if there's not a place and there's not a person, that the dog isn't going to get cleaned up. And this is the beauty of Jesus, is that Jesus is the person and church is the place where people get clean. This is the place for people to be reintroduced into society, where people love them and care about them and help them. And if church isn't that place, then that's the ultimate betrayal of who Jesus is. I think if any of us were to be honest, our first experience with Jesus probably looks a lot like the experience of a man named Matthew. Matthew was one of Jesus' disciples, and Matthew writes an autobiography of Jesus. It's found in our Bibles in the book of Matthew, and we're going to look there. If you have a Bible, open them with me to the book of Matthew chapter 9, and we're going to look in starting in verse 9. And if you don't have a Bible with you, we'll put the verses on the screen. But in Matthew chapter 9, Matthew starts telling the story of his own meeting Jesus. And Matthew isn't clean when Jesus meets him. It says this in Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 9. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at his tax collector's booth. "Follow me and be my disciple," Jesus said to him. So Matthew got up and followed him. There's some things you need to know in the story of Matthew, right? Jesus is just walking along and he walks up to Matthew and looks at Matthew and says, "I want you to follow me and become my disciple." Now, Jesus is a very religious person. He's a religious leader. Matthew is not. See, if a person was going to go into the religious line of work at this day and age, 2,000 years ago, they would have made that decision when they were 12 or 13 years old. And here we have Matthew as a grown person working as a contractor for the Roman government. At this point in time in the land of Israel, 2,000 years ago, Rome rules the known world, the Roman Empire. And they are a colonial power over the Jewish people. And so the Jewish people are living in their own land, but they're being treated like a gold farm. Everything that they make gets taken and goes to the Roman Empire. It's a little bit like Hopper and the ants in A Bug's Life. Because they are bigger and stronger, we can take what it is that you produce back where we want it to be. So there's a natural hatred for people like Matthew who are Jewish, but they're working as contractors for the Roman government. On top of this, the religious rules of the day talk about ritual cleanliness and ritual uncleanliness. Right? If you were doing things that were taboo, you were considered within your own community unclean. So Matthew, for spending time with the Romans, would be considered unclean. He's an outcast in his own society. Now, it doesn't tell us what the specifics of Matthew's backstory are. But you don't take a job knowing that people are going to treat you poorly and you're going to be an outcast from your society and your family's going to be embarrassed and ashamed of you if you've got a lot of options. Matthew, like a lot of people, is doing the job he has to do, not the job he wants to do, to get what he needs to survive. And he's probably not very happy about it. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us what Matthew's backstory is, but we know that there's some desperation in it for a Jewish person of the day to become a contractor for the Roman government. I'm saying this not because we'll ever know what desperation drove Matthew to that job, but because of this. When we see people doing things in desperation, we have two choices. We can help them or we can judge them. And whether or not we help people or judge people usually boils down to whether or not we can identify with that person, whether or not we can see that person and go, "I've felt like that before." I used to drive a 1990 Jeep Cherokee. Yeah, whoa. Just so you guys know, in 1990, Jeep was owned by AMC Corporation. These are not the great years of Jeep. It was a very basic model, okay? It was still a very nice vehicle for me and my wife. We got everywhere we needed to go. It basically looked like a station wagon is what it looked like. But it didn't have all the bells and whistles, right? To roll down the window, you had to do this. And that got it down a quarter of an inch, so you had to then do this. And it was like, man, I've been working on the railroad all the live long day just trying to get this window down. Which, isn't it funny how like you'll pull up to somebody at a stoplight and you need them to roll your window down, and even though no car since this time has come equipped with a hand crank, you'll still look at them and go. So they know to roll the, you don't go. This is still the universal symbol for roll down the window, even though no one's been doing this for years. It didn't have any modern features. It didn't even have a headlight buzzer. You know the headlight buzzer? When you turn your car off, but your headlights are still on, it zzzz, it's like, oh, turn off the headlights. It didn't have a headlight buzzer, which wasn't really a problem because my wife and I had come from California where nobody ever drives with their headlights on during the daytime. I mean, unless it's a gang initiation. So you got that email, right? So when we moved up to Oregon, here's what we didn't know, that for 9 months out of the year, sometimes the sun comes up and you only know that because Rod Hill said so, not because there's actually any daylight. And so sometimes by like 8 o'clock in the morning, there's still so little daylight, you have to have your headlights on. And then by noon, only enough light has come through the clouds that you can see it's gonna be raining the rest of the day. So you have to have your headlights on, not so much to see the road because there's streetlights for that, but that's so the pedestrians and the bicyclists can gauge the speed you're coming so they know when to jump directly in front of your car. The headlight buzzer isn't a problem in California, but in Oregon, because you're driving with your headlights on a lot, if you drive home, you know, like the lights are shining against the side of the building, you know to turn them off. But when you pull into a parking lot of a Fred Meyer, and you don't remember that you turned your headlights on because it's the middle of the day, you're going to walk outside to a car with a dead battery, and then you become that guy. That guy, the one walking around through the parking lot with the two things nobody ever wants to see, the black and the red end of an extension cord. I mean, of the jumper cable, right? No one will make eye contact with this guy. Don't look. Don't look at the man, honey. The number of excuses we will come up with to not help somebody that clearly just all they need is the jump start is astounding, right? I once had a person say like, oh no, those scare me. And I was like, well, your car's not gonna blow up. Like, no, those sharp teeth are really frightening to me, I can't. I had a guy drive by once, roll down his window and go, that's why you don't leave your headlights on. Thanks, I'm gonna write that down. Don't leave headlights on. Yeah, but I did, right? I did. Inevitably, someone stops, right? And they're willing to pull their car in, and then you get it all set up, and you start it up. And you know what they always say? Oh, I've done this a million times. I've been there before. That's what they say. I've been there before. Sometimes they go, oh, dude, I totally had one of these 1990 Jeeps. There's no headlight buzzer. Yeah. See, whether or not we identify with somebody determines whether or not we help or we judge. And the judging comes out in all those little ways. You don't measure up to me, and so therefore I am greater than you, and you're less than me, so hope that works out for you at best, and don't do that at worst. And in the end, is lots of times when we find ourselves in our life in a messy situation, we already did though. We already did, so what's gonna happen next? And what it takes in those moments is someone who's filled with grace and filled with truth. Right? Truth to understand the situation and how it could be made better, but grace, the willingness to sacrifice and get involved. The willingness to sacrifice and get involved. You'd be shocked to discover that this, grace and truth, is exactly how the scriptures describe Jesus. It says this in John 1, chapter 14. The word, Jesus, the word of love that God spoke to us. The word became flesh, that Jesus became human, and he made his dwelling, he lived among us. So that he could experience all that we experience, so he can identify with us like no one else can. And we have seen his glory, right? The greatness of God, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father full of grace and truth. Not full of grace, not full of truth, full of grace and truth. Perfection in how he related to people. Jesus, when he walked up to Matthew that day and called him to be his disciple, was relating to him in perfection. He was doing it the exact way it needed to be done, which means when we are relating to other people, we ought to do it the exact same way that Jesus did. When we come upon someone whose life is such a mess that they are doing things even they don't necessarily want to do, they feel compelled to, that how we ought to relate is with that same perfection as Jesus. This is why we worship Jesus and why he is our example in everything. See, what we want to do is either just throw grace at people, which is enabling, or we want to lob truth bombs on them. And those lobbing truth bombs on them, all they really do is serve to make them feel judged. You're either going to judge people or you're going to help people. Let me ask you this question. What is your response to judgment when people come and they judge you? Is it, you're right, you're right, you're right? Or that's not when our back bows and we puff out our chest and we come against them, right? Don't miss this. Grace. Grace is that first step to getting cleaned up. You know that sometimes that dog that's been rolling around in the mud at the park, having such a great time, it knows it needs to get cleaned up. It wants to come home, but it does not want a bath, right? This is something both dog and cat people can agree on. No, neither of them want to get bathed. You know what I discovered? They have this thing at the groomers now. You mount it on the wall of the tub and you smear peanut butter on it. The dog just gets right in the tub and it starts licking the peanut butter and it gets cleaned up. Don't miss this. Grace is the peanut butter that gets us in the tub so the truth can clean us up. That's how it works. Jesus gives Matthew grace because the truth, right? Come follow me, be my disciple, live with me and become like me. That's the truth. We give grace so that people will want to receive the truth. That's the perfection of Jesus. So what is Matthew's response to this scenario? Matthew's response to this scenario is great. In Matthew 9:10, it says this, Matthew later invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests. That sounds awesome. Jesus, I want you and your friends to come to my house for dinner. Along with many tax collectors, people from work, and other disreputable sinners. Oh no. What are you doing, Matthew? Jesus meets Matthew with grace, but Matthew's got friends in low places, right, Garth? But because Matthew has experienced the grace of Jesus, he invites other people who are like him because he also wants them to experience the grace of Jesus. One of my favorite things about my wife is my wife and I both, we worked in churches for a lot of years, and finally one day she said, I don't know if I know any non-Christian grown-ups. So she quit working at the church and she took a job so she could meet other people who didn't know Jesus who were grown-ups. And she invites them to church regularly. When we experience grace, we want other people to experience grace. So Matthew receives grace from Jesus and he demonstrates grace to his friends. Jesus' response to Matthew's response was to show up. So if Jesus really does have a problem with other disreputable people, he doesn't show up to the party, but he does. And he takes his disciples there. So Jesus and the disciples go to this party with other betrayers and disreputable sinners. Now, in this moment, here's what you need to know about sinners. In this passage, it's referring to the outcasts who aren't following the rules. People whose lives have gone this way, not this way. This is a pretty beautiful story until the religious people show up, because in Matthew 9, chapter 11, now the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the people who sit at the top of the social structure, these people arrive. Now, when the Pharisees saw this, they asked Jesus' disciples, why does your teacher eat with such scum? This is interesting, right? Have you ever noticed that when you don't want to know the answer to a question, you'll do some very specific things? If you really want to know the answer to a question, who do you ask your question to? You ask your question to the person who knows the answer. The Pharisees aren't asking the question of Jesus, they're asking the question of the disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with such scum?" So they're not really asking a question, are they? They're making a statement. They're going to the people who may or may not know the answers, and they're saying some things. Number one, we're better than Jesus and we're better than you. And two, shame on you. Remember what I said, you're either gonna be involved in helping or you're gonna be involved in judging. So they're not just judging Jesus and his disciples, they're also judging this group of people because what do they refer to them as? Scum. You see, when we meet people who don't live up to our standards, we invariably see ourselves as above them. We're the cream that rises to the top, but they're the scum that sits in the bottom of the pail. That's what judgment is always about. We want judgment to be, well, I'm doing the right things and they're doing the wrong things. That's why they're bad. But you can say that and then jump in to help. When you don't jump in to help, but you just pass judgment, what you're actually doing is saying, I am a better person. And if they would be more like me, then I would get more of what I want. And then they would be as successful as I am. So you're demonstrating pride when you do this. This isn't the perfection of grace and truth. This is just pride and greed on display. So they're not talking to Jesus, they're talking to disciples, but I love that Jesus overhears it and jumps right in. Because the very next verse is, when Jesus heard this. When Jesus heard this, he said, healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. Healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. This is one of my absolute favorite things about Jesus in this moment is that Jesus offers a better metaphor. You see, they're stuck with the metaphor of clean and dirty. This is how they think. And these people are scum because they're the dirtiest. But Jesus doesn't refer to them in terms of clean and dirty. Jesus refers to them in terms of healthy and sick. See, a medical metaphor allows you to see the difference between the patient and the illness. He loves the people. He sees the illness as being the thing that's destroying them. He's not making a value statement on them as a person because he loves them. But he's also not ignoring the truth of the fact that these people are living with a tremendous amount of sickness in their life that's making their life less than God wants it to be. So he's given the grace, and here's the truth. Is this something that you would be willing to do when you see people who are different than you? Instead of thinking in terms of better or worse, clean and unclean, as healthy and sick? Because when you see somebody who's sick, aren't you able to identify, oh, I've felt that way before. I want to make the sacrifices, grace, that it takes to get you the help you need, truth. Isn't it true that everyone is a little bit sick if you're here today? The sickness just manifests itself differently, and some of our sicknesses are just a little bit more socially acceptable than other people's sicknesses. For instance, if your sickness is in your thought life, it's a lot harder to see. So if you're constantly having negative thoughts about yourself or others, that sickness is harder for other people to see, so we seem to be better people, but we're still sick. Maybe your sickness is in our finances. We want, or we spend too much and we make too little, we don't save, we need things. Maybe it's in our relationships. Is that we can't be happy alone, so we're always attaching ourselves to someone who's not good for us. Or we run from people who are good for us because we don't think we deserve it. Each and every one of us is sick in some way. The issue is the proximity we have to a doctor. Whether or not we're getting better or getting sicker has to do with whether or not we have proximity to a doctor. And we, as Christians, believe because of his perfection, Jesus is the doctor. Jesus is the person who can get us into the tub with his grace and clean us with his truth and transform us and change us from the life that we have to the life that he wants for us. And so if this is a room full of sick people, it really would be sad if we were to say, well, they're really too sick to come to the hospital. Well, the doctor could help me, but I don't think the doctor could help them. What's interesting to me also is that when Jesus says, I'm here because sick people need a doctor, he's also implying this to the Pharisees. What are you guys doing here? First of all, your name wasn't on the invite. So you kind of came uninvited to judge. So I came to help. You're here to judge. I actually have maybe a new job for you guys. Here's an invitation that has your name on it. It says this in verse 13. Then he added, now go and learn the meaning of this scripture. If you think Jesus was just a super nice guy all the time, Jesus is looking at the people who know the Bible better than anybody else. And he says, go and learn the meaning of this scripture, which means you don't know the meaning of the Bible. I want you to show mercy, not offer sacrifices. Hosea 6:6. In Hosea 6:6, the prophet Hosea tells the people of Israel that God wants mercy, not sacrifices. For I have come to call not those who think they are righteous, but those that know they are sinners. Hey, you guys can go and learn and then run and tell that, is what Jesus says. First off, sacrifices, things that are offered on an altar to God to demonstrate worship. Jesus is saying, if you're not living a life of mercy, if you're not living a life of grace and truth, then whatever you think you're doing by worshiping, it's not amounting to anything. Pharisees, your knowledge, your experience, your sacrifices, your songs, listening to the talk, they don't mean anything if you're not living a life of mercy. Thinking of church as the place that we come to worship and be not bothered by the sickness of the world, it's not the way it is. The church is where we come to be encouraged so we can go out and invite people to meet the doctor. And if we're not engaged in that act of mercy, which Jesus calls that great commission, then what we're doing in here doesn't amount to anything for us. See, this is ultimately why Jesus died. Jesus said, I'm here for the people who know that they're sick. I'm not here for the people who think they've got it all together. Jesus came and died so that he could make a difference in the lives of people who are desperate for change, who need things to be different in their life. So when he came and lived that perfect life and then died in our place and was resurrected like we celebrated last Easter, he offers that new life, that new resurrection life to the people who want it. And you know who doesn't want it? People who don't think that they need it. And so there are people out there who are living in sickness who don't know it. And those people are both religious and unreligious. But the people who know they need Jesus, those are the ones who understand what his sacrifice meant and what it means for them, because it means new life. And maybe you're here today and you're thinking, okay, that sounds great, but you don't know me. You don't know what I've experienced. You don't know what I've done. You don't know what other people have done to me. This might be true in some pipe dream for you, but my reality is a lot different. And I would say, you are absolutely 100% right. I don't know you and I don't know what you've been through, but I do know Jesus. And I know what Jesus offers to everyone, to everyone. A few years ago, I met a woman named Austie. She's fantastic. When you meet Austie, you will be shocked at how much grace and truth she has, how much mercy she is able to offer. And then I got to know Austie's story, and we said, you know what? I want you to hear Austie's story, because if you hear Austie's story, it will start breaking down those barriers between who and what you think God is and what God's doing. This is Austie's story.
So when I was growing up, I lived in a house with a really loving family, and my mom told us about Jesus growing up. But when I was really young, I experienced some pretty severe sexual abuse as a little girl. And then again, this happened as a middle schooler and again in high school by somebody that was supposed to be recruiting high school students into the Marine Corps. And what he was doing is he was recruiting young girls down to his office. And so at the very young age, my mind was pretty skewed on what my body was made for. That led me down a path of complete destruction. I began to drink really heavily at a very young age, about 14, and then that led into drugs. And eventually, by the time I was about 17, I was doing pretty much anything I could get my hands on, from cocaine to drinking and being very sexually active. And it got to a point in my life where I was so desperate for something or someone that I didn't care whether or not I lived or died at this point. And so at the very lowest, I attempted to take my own life. I ended up in the hospital and then a psychiatric inpatient. And so about this time, I had reconnected with a sister and her husband, and they had invited me to church. And I remember thinking, I don't know if I, want to go to church, but out of being polite, I said yes. And I remember that morning, the pastor talking about Jesus, and he explained Jesus in a way to me that I had never really heard before. And so as I sat there with not much left of my life, because truly it was pretty broken at that point, I just looked up with tears streaming down my face, and I accepted Jesus that morning right there at church. I really got to experience what it felt like to have new life. Like when we talk in church about new life, I truly got to experience new life in Jesus and in his forgiveness and in his faithfulness. I think that's the biggest thing looking back that I didn't expect, was I didn't expect to walk in with crumbs, broken pieces, and to walk out with new life, to walk out feeling like God had taken all that weight I walked in with and that it was gone. And that didn't mean my life was perfect or fixed, or that there wasn't going to be years ahead of me to work through and to work out. But I do remember leaving feeling light, like that burden had been lifted off of me. When I came to church that day, my life was wrecked. It was absolutely wrecked. I had nothing left to give. And God took the very little bit that I had. And 12 years later, my life, it's not perfect, but it's good and it's whole. And I have a husband who loves me dearly, who loves our children dearly. I have four beautiful daughters in a relationship with God that continues to grow every single day. And again, is it perfect? No. Is it still a little messy? Yes. But I'm getting to do it and walk through life with him. And that's something I didn't have before.
Austin and Justin were willing to share their story with you today because they experienced the grace and truth that Jesus offers. That there's nothing that we've experienced that he can't redeem and transform. And there's no amount of things that we have done in response that he then doesn't offer us peace and forgiveness in. If you're here today and you're thinking, so what do I do though? What do I do? The first is this. Don't ever hesitate to invite anyone to meet Jesus. So often we become somebody else's no. We rob them of the opportunity to say yes or no for themselves because we think they're too far gone. They're too different. They wouldn't enjoy. They wouldn't like. Austin was like, I don't even necessarily want to go to church, but my sister invited me and so I went. And Jesus turned out to be different than I thought he was and more than I ever expected him to be. So there is not anyone that you should think to yourself, I can't invite them. The invitation costs us nothing. Give them the right to say yes or no. Second, you have to make space for people that you invite to meet Jesus. Right? Nobody wants to feel like a project. People want to feel like friends. And so when you get to know somebody, just get to know somebody. Don't be on the lookout for the things that are wrong that you need to correct them for. Jesus is going to take care of that. Jesus is the only person who can clean people up. And we believe that, which means we can't clean them up before he does. So we want them to meet him and let him clean them up. So when we make that space, it looks like Matthew spending his time and his money to invite people into his life to meet the Jesus that he had met. And what are you doing to make space for people in your life to meet Jesus? That's that gracious generosity where we make sacrifices so other people can know him. And lastly, don't try to clean up. Just fess up. Whether you're meeting Jesus for the very first time or you've known him and you've walked away, we have this false idea that we've got to get some things straight before we can approach Jesus. If we could do that, Jesus would have never come to earth. And so if you're thinking, yeah, I got to do this and this and this, and then I'll give my life to him. That's not how it works. We surrender, and then he takes us and makes us new. And that's a long process. Following Jesus happens over the course of the rest of our lives. But as we follow him, he carries that weight with us, and he removes it from us, and he makes us how we truly wanted to be. No more doing those things that we feel compelled to do based on decisions we made or decisions other people made for or about us. It's that simple. You can come as you are to Jesus, absolutely messy. It's what he wants. And it's what this place has to be. So I'm telling you here today, First Service, Beaverton Christian Church, this is going to be a place where messy people show up and we're making sacrifices of grace and truth to make room for them, because we want more stories of transformation, don't we?